Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. With theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Desjardins, and me, your host, Steve Bastian. Today's question is, are Christians allowed to be competitive in life, sports, and church? How competitive is too competitive? It's really fun that you guys are out here in Vancouver again. It seems like we have a lot of podcasts out here. We were talking about being hungry, and someone mentioned a hot dog, and I ran away like, we gotta go to Dougie Dog. He's the guy that was on Dragon's Den and got the funding to make his hot dogs, and we're going to his restaurant, and we're going to eat like the best hot dog of our lives.
Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every tube steak that inhabits the bun. Of course, yeah. They do have to be properly prepared. For example, I've carefully constructed my hot dogs. You begin with a finely barbecued piece of meat, so it has just the right amount of crispy around the outside, but the tender moistures are kept in the middle. Then, of course, you have to add your mustard and a little bit of relish. Al, being an ungodly pagan, added ketchup to his hot dogs.
No, I want you to understand something. The barbecuing of hot dogs is absolutely unnecessary. Boiling is where it's done. Steaming at the most. You barbecue your hot dogs, and suddenly you get charbroiled nonsense. They start bursting at the seams. You lose stuff. You lose juices. And, no, I did not put ketchup on my hot dog, but I also did not profane it with relish.
Ooh. I have to live with these two guys being ultra-competitive. And the question that I'm posing them this week is, you know, are they allowed to be competitive? Of course, then they're like, we need to have a hot dog eating competition so that see who gets to talk first, I think.
Who has the best water to drink with their hot dog eating competition?
Distilled water.
Huh. Well, I have Dasani sparkling water with fruit flavoring.
So not only are you killing the environment, you're killing yourself.
For the listener, the boys here are going to have 1 minute to eat as many hot dogs as they can. And the winner gets to talk first. I mean, that's how competitive these guys are.
Have you been starving yourself all morning?
Haven't eaten since yesterday, actually.
Now, we were joking about the Vegas Ogs have you as the favorite, but that's because you held a food-eating competition title at one time, right? Some pizza joint or something?
I don't know if it was officially a title, but yes, in high school, at Pizza Hut Buffet, they would allow you to count your slices at the local shop, and the person who had, it turned out, the person who'd eaten the most had eaten just 26 slices, so I was pretty confident that I could beat that. So I did, in fact, make it to 27, and unfortunately, I did have a rather tremendous explosion shortly after. My friend Colin also tried. He only made it to 24, and then he collapsed on the bench and turned pale, and they called the ambulance on him.
Oh, wow.
I made it outside before I had my troubles.
Oh, I was going to say, I personally seen Al, like, devour, you know, large, copious amounts of chocolate in a matter of seconds.
Well, yes. Well, that's just recreational. I've done this myself, and it was a pie-eating contest, and I absolutely annihilated the rest of the church, and of course, the prize was another pie.
Yeah, 10 minutes, 65 hot dogs, I think, is the world record.
Oh, well, I don't think we'll be competing on quite that one. Also, before we go, I do want an official measurement, because Al sort of made some intonation that he may have shaved his buns.
I did not shave my buns, and I resent the implication. I almost shaved my buns, but I did not shave my buns.
Both of you are elders in the church, so I assume that, you know, to maintain your standing, you're going to be honest about this, guys.
All right.
Your hands should be on the table. That way you don't have an advantage if you're already squishing the bun in your hands or something like that.
Great.
1 minute starting now. Wow. Chad, he's eating like a python. I think he just unhinged his jaw. He's swallowing them whole. Oh, Al is using the piranha technique. There's food flying everywhere. Bite for a second. I think that's it. Maybe more. Oh, Chad has some food coming out of his nose. You're going to have to eat that too to make that count. Al, you're going to have to pick up all those pieces falling to the floor. Yep, all those on the floor, yeah. Chad's gone cross-eyed. Maybe he's met his match. He gets thrown out of a hockey game from his conduct. Are you going to let a simple hot dog beat you? Oh, he's working on number three. Al's speed is increasing. It looks like he's mentored under the Cookie Monster. There's food flying everywhere.
Nom 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 nom! We are hot dogs!
8 seconds! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1! Okay, boys! You finish what's in your mouth. I'm making sure that nothing else goes in there. Okay.
I feel woozy.
That was awesome.
Oh, how you doing, Chad? Why are you under the table? Okay.
So, Al, how many hot dogs did you get through? We'll do decimal places. Two complete hot dogs.
I believe there's a Queen song that actually speaks about my situation right now.
Okay, Chad, how many hot dogs?
Three dogs! Gone, baby!
Oh my
50% more! That's like a shutout!
Oh my gosh. I feel shame. I had great hope at the beginning of the game, and then by the end, I knew I had lost.
Guys, you know, we've had two competitions on our podcast. You know, you're now tied 1-1. We're going to have to come up with something else down the road that's a tiebreaker.
Something that's both nerdy and involves food.
Yes. Well, if there's two people that I will figure that out, that's you guys. Al won the Star Trek quiz, and Chad has won the food eating competition.
I mean, there's still more hot dogs, though, so I think I'm just going to keep eating.
Well, you keep on eating. But, Chad, competitiveness within the church and within Christians with each other.
His mouth's full.
What does the Bible say about that?
Well, let me approach it just by simply reading to you from the scripture, the Gospel of John. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark, and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So Peter went out with the other disciple, and they were going toward the tomb. Now both of them were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter, and reached the tomb first. And stooping to look in, he saw the linen clothes lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He too saw the linen cloths lying there, and the face cloth, which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, the one who had reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed.
That's an excellent decision to choose that scripture. You're absolutely right. As he's writing, I have no doubt that as he's writing, he's like, I know this is going to be used for all time, so I just want to make sure I have a little addendum here.
The other disciple. That's just the choice of using that wording is just... is sweet.
Peter might be popular, but there is the one whom Jesus loved. And Peter might be quick, but there is the one who was quicker.
Yeah.
Signed, the other disciple.
So Chad, you're saying that since the disciples are competitive, it's A-okay?
Well, I would say it is a little bit more complicated than that. But I truly think that begins to make the point that if we are talking about this, the only question in here is really about attitude and appropriateness. Besides John, Paul was an athlete. He used athletic metaphors everywhere to define the Christian life. And when he does, he describes spiritual warfare as wrestling, Ephesians 6:12, and spiritual growth as running, 2 Timothy 2:5. And you know, that athletic mindset seems to be behind the way Paul speaks quite a bit. Let me just give you three references. He spoke to Pharisees who opposed him in Philippians 3:4. I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh also. If anyone else thinks he has a reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Church members who challenged his theology were similarly confronted in 1 Corinthians 14:18. Now I thank God that I speak in tongues more than all of you. And, of course, to his fellow apostles in 1 Corinthians 15:9, most people don't realize this, but it's really important. He says, humbly, I am the least of the apostles, unworthy to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God, but by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace towards me was not in vain. Why, Paul? 1 Corinthians 15:10. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, i.e. the other disciples. So there doesn't seem to be any limits in the New Testament on a competitive spirit. My questions would just go, and I think I'll be the same, into how we cultivate and use that. We talked about heroes of drinking. Was it just last week?
Yeah.
If we're competing in that way, apparently that's bad. But competition itself, no problem. What do you guys have to fire back at that?
Well, without question, I mean, God designed us. He gives us talents, he gives us interests, he gives us gifts and abilities. Some people are amazing at math, others at spelling, some at art or writing or running or jumping or catching a ball. We know that God gives some people physical abilities beyond the abilities of other people, beyond the norm, and he does that for his own glory. Samson's a great example. He had great physical strength, so he could wage war against the enemies of God.
Mm-hmm.
David was said to be physically handsome, well-built, was clearly skilled with hand weapons and battle tactics. He would make an amazing sportsman. The prophet Elijah, he's seen running huge distances for long periods of time. He'd be an incredible marathon runner. There are people who are gifted to be artisans by God. They're better than others. The people that built the temple, or great writers like Paul. David could write amazing poetry and songs. All these people could enter a creative skills competition and win it. Now, all of these physical gifts are given by God for a purpose, and those purposes are twofold. One, to serve God's people. Two, to bring God glory. Therefore, I have absolutely no problem believing that God continues to gift people in a special way to do things that only a few people can do for the exact same reasons, to serve God's people and bring God glory. Now, as Chad said, what they do with that God-given ability of physical strength or craftsmanship or hand-eye coordination, that's the big question.
Right.
If we drop this into the realm of sports, which is the easiest one for us to talk about, but it could easily talk about spelling bees or art shows or writing contests or anything, right? Is a Christian biblically allowed to be competitive in sports, try their best, dominate others, and use their physical prowess to defeat an opponent?
Yes, I think it. You know, from what my understanding of the Bible is, yeah, it does allow for that competition. But when does it go too far?
I very much believe, scripturally speaking, in what the Reformers and the Puritans later would come to speak of as a vocation in life. We're agents. The church is distinct from the world. It's not of the world, but it's in the world. And in the world, we're to be doing the things that reflect and demonstrate the kingdom of God. And part and parcel of that is doing the task that God's called us to do, really to Adam. Romans 13 tells us government is given as a ministration from God. And Paul tells us, whatever your hand finds to do, do it to the glory of God. And do it with all your might in that particular verse, sorry. But anyway, the point being that doctrinal vocation is that whatever we're doing, it can be used for the glory of God and the good of society. And I don't think we need to really mince, what exact value this brings in to some principial cause of the kingdom. No, it's that we are being good witnesses and testimonies and working. But I do question at times, for example, when we talk about some of the things in like professional athletics and the many billions of dollars that are spent there, as to whether really, is this really, not the core idea, but is this trapings really a legitimate vocation?
Let me answer that, because I actually think you can say yes. Now, let's get away from the fact that they make a bazillion dollars and that there's teachers starving and that they have to eat bologna sandwiches every day. But let's talk about, just in that realm of sports, about whether or not that is a valid thing to even be, to be a professional sportsman. See, I'm going to go back to what you said, and that's Paul uses competitive athletes as an illustration to help us understand how we should be living out the religious life. So they actually have to condition their bodies, they exercise, they push hard towards the goal, they play by the rules, they try their best to win the prize. He uses all these things.
Yep.
So that he uses these guys. So even after talking about the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11, Paul can't help but referencing weightlifters, wrestling, and endurance running. If he's talking to Timothy, he's talking about physical training that has value. And then at the end of his life, he says, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, I've kept the faith. Clearly, he's talking about MMA and NASCAR. I personally think that Paul was a sports fan. Therefore, I think we can make a very good argument that people who are in competitive sports have been put there by God to inspire fellow believers through their expertise and through their passion so that they can be better Christians. And that requires being competitive.
As the hot dog champion,
have inspired millions.
Have inspired L to think deeply. I'm just stop eating hot dogs. I'm going to get sick.
It's in its essence is a podcast, which is audio. Nobody wants to listen to you eat.
I understand that now. I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Al, on the principles you're speaking. I'm fully an endorser of that. What I was kind of referring to was perhaps the way the infrastructure has gone to the fact, a little bit like we talked about before, our monetary values are going to be different in a free society. I'm okay with that. But they also reflect our perceptions, our attitudes, and our true values.
Yeah.
What I was kind of getting at was the idea, Hollywood people, professional athletes, yeah, they should get paid. They probably should get paid well if they do well. But as a infrastructure, the value placed there is much higher than the infrastructure we have for, like, you brought up teachers or some of the other things. And I wonder within that if there's not a tendency to get away from the good values of sport, the representation we can do, the glorifying God in it, and it's just kind of a lot of bad things happen around the edges, you know?
No, I think you're exactly right. For example, like building your body, getting better at your craft, all these things can be benefits of competition. You have to get better. You have to get stronger. It gives you the chance to practice humility as you submit yourself to trainers and coaches, as the judges of the sport actually talk to you about what you're doing and what you're doing wrong and right. You have to listen to people. You learn cooperation. There's a lot of good things that happen. But the thing is, I mean, even defeat can teach you good things. But there's a lot of dangers of it. Like, one danger of being too competitive is the fact that it can make someone comparative.
Mm. Like, I've eaten 6 hot dogs now, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. No, you hit my point exactly. So instead of being competitive, they're being comparative. So you're not just trying to be the best you can be, Chad. You're literally trying to be better than someone else, me.
So pride
and envy and jealousy is setting into your heart. Instead of thanking God for who God created you to be and how many hot dogs you can eat, you're now comparing yourself to me. And possibly, if you go down this road, you start complaining to God that God didn't make you right, because now you've met someone that can eat 9. Now you're tempted to take, you know, performance-enhancing hot dog drugs or performance-enhancing hot dog steroids or cheat. Just so you can fill in what God didn't give you.
You know, right? This is all I have to say. In the last week of November, in the middle of the afternoon, there was a hot dog eating contest between 2 podcasters, Al and the other podcaster. And Steve said, "Eat!" And they began to eat together. But then the other podcaster got through 3 hot dogs. Then later, when Al had finished his 2 hot dogs, the competition ended. But the other podcaster continued to eat and has completed 6 hot dogs and now feels sick and wish he hadn't have done it and is now humbled. Moral of the story, don't eat 6 hot dogs.
And that's really kind of the message that I wanted to give, is this idea of competition, which in its raw form can be really good and can lead to many positive things. But when it gets out of whack and it gets out of control, it can cause great devastation. A person can keep a lot of details in their heads, and that's really important if you're a competitor, but when it leads to perfectionism and thinking you can control the world by what you do, then all of a sudden it becomes sin. You know, there's a lot of good things that come from competition, but it can also bring a person's dark side out. It brings Chad's out terribly. So if a person already struggles with anger or pride or fear, then you throw them into a competitive environment, and that gives them opportunity to have great temptations, even to build negative habits where they start thinking that the only way they can win is to do it mad, or to visualize themselves as the best, or even to demonize the other players, as Chad does.
It's called smack talk, Al. In all seriousness, though, here's where I think it becomes quite interesting. I spent most of my life playing sports. I can appreciate its values, and I can see some of its dangers. We often talk, and it seems to me to be much too shallow level, you know, just about doing our athleticism for the glory of God. What we mean is I'm doing athletics, and if I can call it Christian. And, you know, as I think about that, how many people were praying for the Oilers to turn around last weekend?
Mm.
And they said, did God not care about those people? Was he not glorified in what happened there? I think we've got to be really careful when we talk about those things. To me, it goes back to that doctrine of vocations, even in competing in sports. It's enjoying what we're doing, seeking good in what we're doing, doing our best in what we're doing. And yeah, we trust in God's providence. But it gets kind of silly when we start turning that. And I wonder if you guys have some thoughts, both of you, really, Steve, Elle. When you're doing these kind of things, you know, Steve, you're in education. You have student athletes. How do you talk to them about what they're doing and bring out a godly side in it?
Well, I guess to answer your question simply is I always encourage the students to do the best of their ability. And when they're doing their best, you know, that's using what God gave them. And that's usually where I go, even with my own children. You always do your best. You're not going to score every goal. You're not going to run the furthest. But just do your best with what God has given you.
What if your kid's Wayne Gretzky?
Well, I'm not equipped for that. I'm not a super competitive person overall. I enjoy competition, but to bring back Al and I used to play racquetball once in a while. Sometimes I'd be like, Al, it's just a game. You had to beat me. Especially if I did well and I was beating him. But, Al, you could just see him hone in. He's like going for the blood. That's not wrong. I see that between my two sons. They're competitive already, and they're just little guys. They strive to get better. And, if you're an amazing, talented person, I think when we had Russ Smith with us from Hocus Pick, he talked about the drummer being in a position to be able to speak. If you're in the band, also you have a higher presence profile. I think athletes can do the same thing. You're recognized, and you can use that as an avenue to evangelize and to lift people up.
Yeah. I think speaking for me as a dad, answer the question, what if you were a father of Wayne Gretzky? I think you have to realize that the temptation that is placed on that person is going to be extremely high. That the opportunities given to them is going to be wonderful, but at the same time, that is going to be a massive double-edged sword, and to be able to prepare them for what's going to be coming at them. And I think of all the negatives that can come through, the temptations of sport and the temptation just being a part of a sport, let alone all the junk that happens outside of it. When you start becoming famous, you start becoming known, you start becoming making the money, your chicks are throwing themselves at you, all that stuff's happening. I mean, there's a lot.
I agree with you. I think it was Jack Johnson from the Columbus Blue Jackets whose parents blew through $25 million of his money and are now bankrupt and have bankrupted him.
Yeah. Yes, I just read about that.
I mean, the temptation stuff that can surround that is bizarre. But character, I want to go back to that because that was the key thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think of the NFL guys. They were living literally paycheck to paycheck. I don't know how that works in the NFL, but when they had the lockout, there were guys who couldn't afford the payments on their mansions the next month. They had to go borrow money because they were living the lifestyle, and they thought it was never going to end, and they just they had an amazing character for being a football player, but when it came to life, it seemed to be lacking.
Now, amazing. How does that not cross over to some extent?
I know. But that's what bugs me about it, is that it's supposed to. And if God sets these people up, be an example to us to be of good character and all the good characteristics that are required to be a good athlete, how can they not have that transfer into real life? And whenever I think of sports, I always think of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, because they were absolutely tied together. There were times that people were so into sport during that time, as the empire was coming into its close, that whole stadiums would take up their arms, they would go kill the opposing team's fans, then they'd spill it into the street and start a riot. There were I think the biggest one was 30,000 people were killed in the biggest sports riot. Because people get crazy about this stuff. I mean, that's ancient problems. That would never happen today, would it? Ever? Vancouver?
Yeah, we're here. You might not want to say that too loud.
Or Montreal, or Kansas City, or every soccer game ever.
That's the good thing about being a fan of a team in Edmonton. Year-round, it's actually too cold for a riot.
That didn't stop us from burning Peter Pocklington in effigy in the street.
Well, that's fair enough. You got to keep warm somehow.
That's right.
And if anyone deserves it.
So if I had to wrap this up, honestly, if I had to wrap up a conclusion here, it would simply be this. Competition and competitiveness can be used to reflect God's glory, enjoy his gifts, inspire people to greatness, or it can bring out the worst in people and be a major contributing factor to the destruction of entire civilizations. Yeah. So if you can be competitive and obey the scriptures and love Jesus and pursue the kingdom and remember that your greatest treasure is in heaven, go for it. If competition is a source of temptation and it turns you into a horrible person and it becomes an idol, then avoid it. Would you agree with that, Chad?
Yeah, certainly to a certain extent. I'm thinking in Pauline categories here. We are to be competitive at least with ourselves in our spiritual walk.
Certainly.
And I'm not certain that we would ever be able to legitimately cut competition. I think it would be, going back to what I was saying before, it's more about where we put it. We have to curb ourselves.
to learn how to do it.
Yeah, because I get what you're saying too, right? Like, I mean, don't play backgammon with the ladies at church if you're going to start screaming and throwing stuff around, right? I mean,
right.
I totally understand. I'm with you on that. I'm just trying to think it through. 1 Corinthians 9, Paul has to defend himself against attacks on his apostleship. And he concludes his defense. I'll read the words. He says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you might obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I don't run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body, keep it under control," interesting, "lest after preaching to others, I myself should become disqualified." You see, it's the end of his thing about he's a qualified apostle. And in the midst there, he gives us some instruction. I think it's very instructive that he tells us in there to run the Christian race to obtain the prize. And I think if you're watching the NFL, the NHL, well, maybe not Major League Soccer, because that's so slow it won't really stimulate anything. But the rest of the sports, it should be an illustration to us. We should look at that and say, yeah, you know what, my discipline doesn't match that. That makes me think of where I'm at and how much I need to grow. And I need to put that kind of discipline into my walk with God.
Can I ask you a question, Chad? And this is kind of my final question here. What do we do with trash talk? I wrote something on it and then I completely deleted it because, quite frankly, I don't know what to do with it. It can easily be a positive thing because everybody's getting it, everybody's fun, it's part of the environment, and everybody gets it. You know, they're not going to walk away heartbroken. And then there's a point at which it clicks over, and it becomes sin, and it becomes defamation of character, and it becomes overwhelming anger. So talk to me about, I mean, in your experience as a professional athlete.
Not a professional athlete.
Oh, I could have sworn you were saying something that you actually were a professional hot dog eating athlete at one point.
Fair enough.
No, that's exactly what you were sounding like.
A competitive athlete.
That's okay.
And for my categories, I played at the highest levels that were available. But it cost me money. I didn't get any money. And I played sports through college. I've had to wrestle through a lot of those questions because there are stuff that's contextually appropriate that isn't understood by those who are not part of the game. People, when you're getting at the face-off circle and you're getting ready for the puck to drop, it's very common for your opponent to try to distract you by saying something and you doing the same. Very common to try to intimidate somebody. What I've always looked at, though, is there is, even within the sport, there are crossing the lines. And one that you guys might just have heard of in the news, if you remember last year, because sometimes the crowd gets into it, somebody threw a banana peel on the PK Subban. Because he's black and was making, I guess, some obnoxious thing about him being a monkey. That's disgusting. In the Bible, we're all one race, and we have some different diversities. But that anti-biblical thinking, as it was brought forward there in a racist and disgusting way, that happens also on the ice. And that's one example. That's passes the line. And discipline will usually happen for those things, but sometimes you just get burned. Nobody knows what was said in the corner except for the person who heard it. Yeah, you can sin. You can clearly sin. I think I'm okay with the concept because a lot of time it's in good fun and part of the competition. I learned a lot of German playing some international games against a German team, and later I found out that I'm really not allowed to say any of those words.
Right. So, I may know some of those words.
The Bible does tell us, you know, let your speech be always with grace, speaking so that you can build up everybody. But wait, you know what? When you're stepping into the boxing ring, you're not gonna be like, "You're such a good looking guy. You're such a great fighter. I'm so proud to be here with. I hope you really torque me." I mean, that's not gonna happen, right? And it'll be stupid too. That's not the kind of thing those verses are speaking to. But you do see at the end of a boxing match, the guy who wins. I mean, I'm talking about a good, gracious one. The guy who wins, you know, he comes up and he embraces that other guy, and they do a joint press conference after, and he says, "Man, this guy really showed his stuff. I was really hard-pressed. I'm so proud of him. That was a great..." And you'll see that, and you'll see that mutual respect. When you're seeing that, all the other stuff, to me, fits into it. And sometimes you see that. You see guys bite off somebody's ear, you know?
Yeah.
that kind of helps, I think. That's what I would mean by the lines.
Excellent. Thanks, Chad. Appreciate that.
Thanks, guys. You know, really interesting conversation and competition, and we'll have to see how this goes. Chad and I will razz Al about the Oilers, and we'll put this into practice that we can trash talk a little, but not go too far. So, thank you, guys.
Is it crossing the line now to call Al an Oilers fan? Because I think that's actually become a dirty word.
This has been Carnivore Theology with Chad, Al, and Steve. Thank you for listening today as we discuss competition in a biblical context. To find out more about Carnivore Theology, or if you have any topics or questions you want us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting us on our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. If you like what we're doing, please like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.